Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is August 15th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 71 of Who's Reading the Organon. We will be reading aphorism number 49 and aphorism number 50. You may have received a message today. There are three constants in life: change, choice, and principles. That is a quote from Stephen Covey. Let's see how this applies. And there's also a another inspiration to get us started, a quote by Quotes to Smile, and I have may have even said it before, but it's such a good one, let's repeat it. It's a Chinese proverb that says, "Tell me and I'll forget. Show me and I may remember. Involve me and I'll understand." So that is why we are so involved in the study of homeopathy and the practice of homeopathy, that we have to get in there and really do it, experience it, live it, and read it. And let's see if Vera is, we're still waiting for Vera to get in on the line. So we can begin with a little meditation. This is by Steve Freeman, one of my favorites. He says, "When the things get rough, think the world was brought into being with goodness, and the ultimate good for man is that he should not be shamed, but feel as a partner in the fulfillment of the divine plan. Free bread is to us bread of shame. Such is the nature of man. That is why nothing good comes without toil, and according to the toil can be known the harvest that will be reaped in the end." There, that is the quote from him. Therefore, we all feel much better about ourselves when we work for something and then gain the reward. Albert Einstein says, this is a quote from Albert Einstein that was repeated by Greatest Quotes on Twitter, "I have no special talents. I am only passionately curious." I wonder how Albert Einstein felt about himself with that. Vera is here. Hello, Vera. Can you hear me? I hope there is sound today. Okay. No sound. So let's keep going. Of news on the network, I did mention that we have lots of different discussions going on, and we are fortunate that Dr. Sadhana has replied in quiz number 5 as to the remedy. And so I'm telling Vera right now that she's going to have to sign in again because I'm not hearing her sound. So we thank Dr. Sadhana for taking us through constitutional types and what the end result of this particular person who was having problems and came into the clinic and found the answer through something that she had knowledge of. And she says that the Asafoetida was the answer. So that is totally mysterious to anybody who's listening and doesn't know what I'm talking about. That means get on the network and look at the particular question that was going on so that you can learn something. Also, there is I put up on the network a pivotal video by Dr. Shiv Chopra, which exposes a drug and government corruption. It's a 9-part series. Therefore, you might have to just keep clicking to each of the sections. And this was posted both regarding an article in the New York Times that drug companies face federal inquiries about the drugs and the device makers and what is going on in the medical community today. And also, this is a reference to the 5 toxic items that are still in our food, a very important subject written up by Dr. Mercola, asking us to clean up what we are putting in our bodies. And while we're waiting for Vera to get back onto the line, I will go ahead with...
Hi, Debbie. Can you hear me now?
Much, much better. Must have had a problem with the connection. I guess we will go ahead and begin with the aphorism number 49. Would you like to read?
Okay.
Yes.
A brief moment, so glasses switch. Aphorism 49. We should have been able to meet with many more real, natural homeopathic cures of this kind if, on the one hand, the attention of observers had been more directed to them, and on the other hand, if nature had not been so deficient in helpful homeopathic diseases.
Okay, can you want me to carry on from here? It says, it seems as if he's pointing out 2 ways to have found more real homeopathic cures rather than superficial suspensions of cures using the allopathic method rather than that. How can we find, he seems to say we've got a certain number of similars that he has at his disposal, and this is the best way to find a permanent rapid cure. And he wants to know how he can get some more of these types of cures through observation. Well, actually, am I misstating, or do you want to say something?
I would see it differently. I mean, it's sort of along the same track, but with different emphasis. How many people do you ask, have you ever experienced one similar disease, a stronger similar disease, cancelling out a weaker? And people start thinking, and do they remember? No, they don't really remember, because the attention of the observers was not more directed to them. People didn't really take notice of it. They had a cough or a cold, and then they got the flu, and then finally they felt better, and they were so happy to feel completely better, they didn't notice that actually something chronic that had been going on for a while was resolved by the similar acute disease. So
yes.
Hahnemann is saying, the first part of what Hahnemann is saying in 49, as I understand it, is simply that people don't notice. They don't notice this kind of thing. Their attention wasn't drawn to it. And you'll see after, I've noticed this in several people that I've had the discussion with, after you draw their attention to this phenomenon, they start noticing it. They start realizing when they have a flu after a cold, and then the whole thing clears up, and they start realizing it. The second part of this aphorism says... we would have seen more real natural homeopathic cures. He's talking about homeopathic cures by natural diseases, not artificial similars. He's saying if nature had not been so deficient in helpful homeopathic diseases, meaning nature sometimes provides similar diseases which can cure according to symptom similarity, and they can cure homeopathically. But nature doesn't have that many that are helpful. Sadly, nature often has harmful natural diseases that will wipe out the chronic disease and the patient at the same time. So
that's pretty strong stuff. Yeah, I was going to say just about the same thing, Vera. That for the first, there's two parts. He wants to know how to improve observational skills and the employment of medicinal actions. And the first part is it mankind who is at fault? And the second part to me is it nature that is lacking in providing these diseases that cancel each other out? So to go even further, for the first part, if a physician had been more, not just the person themselves, but if the physician had been more observant of those instances when the natural cure was evident, somehow we can easily miss the event of the cure. When someone mm-hmm. first gets a disease and then the disease ends, we don't know how that occurred. This takes really keen senses to realize that there was something in the environment, perhaps, that had changed the individual's health, and to recognize the medicinal action that had taken place. So these things are occurring probably every day, and mm-hmm. we're just not aware of it. And the second part was exactly as you said. If nature had provided the natural cures for us to observe, such as he related regarding the annihilation previously of the measles and the whooping cough, which was similar infectious disease at the so these things have to occur at the same time in the same region. So those actions are overlapping for them to observe this to occur.
Mm-hmm.
That was really what I had prepared and had been thinking about when I read. It seemed as if aphorism number 49 was so small, there was hardly anything there, but in actuality, it's pretty rich in he is questioning himself how to improve his skills and his knowledge.
I wouldn't agree that he's questioning the aphorism. I don't think he's questioning himself and how to improve skills, but he is questioning why the research is thin on the ground. Why can mm-hmm. you not find sufficient examples or more mm-hmm. examples, let's say? He doesn't say sufficient. He says we would have been able to meet with many more examples if people mm-hmm. had observed them, if their attention was drawn to them and written them down and documented them and stuff like that. So
mm-hmm.
I think he is looking for how to expand the knowledge. And
okay.
expanding the knowledge obviously leads to an expansion of skills. But that's kind mm-hmm. of how I see the focus of that aphorism.
Right.
Shall we continue?
Yes, let's do that. Aphorism number 50.
Would you like to read it?
Okay. Mighty nature herself has, as we see, at her command as instruments for effecting homeopathic cures, little besides the miasmatic diseases of constant character, the itch, measles, and smallpox, morbid agents, which as remedies are either more dangerous to life or more to be dreaded than the disease they are to cure, or of such a kind like the itch that, after they have effected the cure, they themselves require curing in order to be eradicated in their turn, both circumstances that make their employment as homeopathic remedies difficult, uncertain, and dangerous. And how few diseases are there to which man is subject that find their similar remedy in smallpox, measles, or itch? Hence, in the course of nature, very few maladies can be cured by these uncertain and hazardous homeopathic remedies, and the cure by their instrumentally is also attended with danger and much difficulty. For this reason, that the doses of these morbific powers cannot be diminished according to circumstances as doses of medicine can. But the patient afflicted with the analogous malady of long standing must be subjected to the entire dangerous and tedious disease, to the entire disease of smallpox, measles, or itch, which in its turn has to be cured. And yet, as is seen, we can point to some striking homeopathic cures affected by this lucky concurrence. All so many incontrovertible proofs of the sole therapeutic law of nature that obtains in them cure by symptom similarity. Take it away, Vera. This is one tongue twister.
It's a tongue twister, but on the one hand, we had aphorism 49, which actually said quite a lot packed into a small package. Whereas here,
uh-huh.
here I think Hahnemann is not saying that much that he hasn't said before. He's calling a stronger, similar natural disease a homeopathic remedy. But it's an uncertain and hazardous homeopathic remedy because you can't turn it up to a certain amount, turn it off at will, make it stronger, make it weaker. But the similar natural disease is homeopathic. But it's uncertain and it's dangerous. And usually once it's come in, it needs to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
Only he's saying over and over again that we see that the therapeutic law of nature here is cure by symptom similarity. Now this is a big argument in the homeopath, in the world of homeopathy today, in terms of how do you use remedies, how do you decide on use of remedies. If a remedy has just been shown in a clinical setting to help certain symptoms, do you prescribe based on that, or do you only prescribe based on what the remedies have shown in provings? Now, I think Hahnemann is quite clear on that, that you prescribe based on provings. Clinical is part of the picture, but the basis is what can cause a symptom in a healthy person. Only there's a lot of controversy on this subject. I'm sure there will be discussion on the board about it. And part of the discussion does go around, was Hahnemann the start and the end of the discussion, or was Hahnemann for his time and then other people take it away from then? I mean, my personal point of view is Hahnemann showed us how to do homeopathy, and he set the parameters of the grand experiment that is homeopathy, and he showed if you do it this way, then you get the results. And I'm interested in getting the results, so I prefer to do it Hahnemann's way. But there are many streams now in homeopathy, and we come over and over again to the same thin ice in terms of the discussion.
Thin ice?
Thin ice, yes.
The slippery slope? Okay. Well, you know, when I'm looking at what he's written here, I feel as if he's directing our attention to the use of vaccinations during his time, that a lot is talking somewhat about use of the principle, the use of the cowpox, the use in the footnote here, 58 and 59, he says, and the exanthematous contagious principle present in the cowpox lymph, and namely smallpox and measles. He's grouping these, he's saying actually three different contagious diseases, or I don't know, the itch may be not contagious, but miasmatic. So smallpox and measles or itch, he's grouping them together for a specific purpose. He's not putting in here tuberculosis or any other infectious disease. He's trying to make a point maybe that nature provides a cure, and that when we try to use a vaccination from these diseased morbific agents in a too much quantity and the employment of it as this for that, when you have this, you just get this vaccination by giving, it's more isopathic. And it's also bypassing the natural system of the human body, where we take things in through our senses, through our skin, for our nasal mucus, nasal passages, and touching things, but we're injecting them. It's a different way. It's a totally different approach to understanding healing. And I feel like he's, in a way, touching upon that in this particular aphorism number 50.
I think if you follow the track that you're developing, and we see when Hahnemann is talking about using the natural diseases as homeopathic remedies, he says it's difficult, uncertain, and dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And he refers to the entire dangerous and tedious disease. The thing is, I think perhaps that's like the essential difference between a natural and an artificial disease is the same as the difference between a natural and an artificial anything. If you make something, if you develop something and it's an artificial disease, then you can turn it on and off at will. You can strengthen it and weaken it at will. There's nothing uncertain about it. There's nothing even difficult about it. It's as if you have a dial and you decide based on your patient and your understanding of the case how strong the remedy can be. You have control. Whereas when you inject a natural disease into a person, you don't have control. You don't know what's going to happen. You can't turn it up or down. You basically give the injection and hope and cross your fingers, which is what happens with vaccinations. You take the baby in to be vaccinated and they say, well, there might be this and there might be that, and we hope it won't be, but they don't know. Nobody will tell you when you take a child in to be vaccinated, this will happen. This will not happen.
Yes. When these outcomes and responses occur, how do you deal with them? That's another question. That's quite true. So is he saying the danger with working with these substances is the danger when a homeopath works with these substances based on the law of similarity? Or is there, even for him, was he tentative about it?
Well, I wouldn't make the direct parallel to vaccinations because he hasn't presented it in the text. He's presented the diseases themselves as being a way that nature affects cures based on the law of similars. So based on the law of similars means homeopathically. But since I'm very text-bound, and since he doesn't actually refer to vaccines in this aphorism, I wouldn't say for sure he's referring to vaccines and wouldn't really develop it based on that assumption. What I do think that he is doing is he's developing the logical argument to the extent you can develop it. So on the one hand, he's saying we learn from nature. Nature shows us ways in which a stronger similar disease annihilates the weaker. But now there are certain problems with that, the way nature does it. Therefore, see, it's like if you see a flowchart with the argument. One, we learn from nature. Two, this is how nature does it. Three, the problems when nature is doing it, you can kill the patient.
Right.
And as he will go on to say, how can homeopathy as a therapeutic healing method avoid the problems that nature does when it clumsily uses this way of destroying the lesser disease.
Okay, so maybe what's happening is I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself, since I know that we use nosodes and he has not proposed that right yet. Maybe that's where I'm, you know, getting ahead of myself, and that's my thinking. I wasn't considering it a question to you about vaccinations. I was considering it a question about the use of this natural disease through nosodes.
Ah, but nosodes are not use of natural disease. As soon as you dilute, and potentize a remedy, you're not talking about natural disease. You're talking about an artificial disease which can be turned on and off at will. A natural disease, maybe this is where we need to put the emphasis. A natural disease is one that happens in nature. A person catches measles, catches smallpox. Hopefully, no conspiracy theorist is causing smallpox epidemics, but or not conspiracy, whatever. Move away from that one. But the concept
warfare.
Of a natural, exactly, a natural disease is one that comes about naturally through nature, contagion. Kid is in the kindergarten, catches flu from another kid, brings it home, parents catch it. That's natural disease. An artificial disease is when you're given a remedy for proving, and you start getting symptoms. As soon as you stop taking the remedy, the symptoms should go away. When you give a remedy to a sick person and it's correct, then you're producing an artificial disease which is hardly visible because of the symptom similarity to the natural disease. We know it's artificial because at the end of treatment, when the natural disease has been annihilated, all of a sudden we'll start seeing some symptoms come back and they will be noticeable. Mm-hmm. And if we, as we've seen in other aphorisms that we've studied on case management, if at that point we stop giving the remedy, the symptoms go away. It's a basic that in an artificial disease, which is caused by a remedy, if the symptoms are visible, then we're seeing just medicinal symptoms. And if we stop giving the remedy, the symptoms will go away.
Much the same, actually.
I remember being given an allopathic drug, which caused horrendous side effects. It was given, it was prescribed inappropriately. And finally, one of the doctors saw what was going on. He said, it's all because of the drug. Stop taking the drug and the symptoms will go away. Within 2 weeks, most of the symptoms went away because they were purely side effect to the drug that I was taking. It was an artificial disease. The problem is that very often the iatrogenic artificial just compounds itself. Yes, I'm sorry.
No, that was the kind of, you were answering my question at the end there, that iatrogenic disease can occur from repeated dosing of medicinal agents that are too much for the individual, and that we are not able to regulate, and, you know, with water dosing or whatever. But, you know, so if somebody's, for instance, there is a concept today that taking an aspirin every single day of your life is good for you, and there are many, many people who do that. And I'm wondering what imposition that has on the body, and would that be affecting an artificial iatrogenic disease? And you have 3 minutes to answer that question.
I just wonder what happened to the apple a day keeps the doctor away. You know, the people who take an aspirin a day, do they have an apple a day as well?
I don't know, but it would be a good
idea.
Which
is more important? Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are a lot of people who take that, who have those ideas that doing a particular thing every day is going to help them, even, you know, to take a supplement every day. Is that healthy? Is that good? I wonder, you know, should we be taking the vitamin D supplement, or should we going outside and getting some sunlight? Is the body lacking in its capacity to be balanced and maintain health only because we don't have enough nutrients? There's people who say that our foods have been depleted because our environment has been, soils have been depleted. That is a totally different subject for another time. But it's
I find
a
the whole discussion.
Field.
It's fascinating, and there are no conclusions, but I think that a moment of joy a day also keeps the doctor away.
That sounds really lovely. So we should end with our meditation, something really good, something positive. I'll repeat what I started with. Stephen Covey says there are three constants in life: change, choice, and principles. And I thank you so much for sharing the study hall with me. And
thanks,
we keep
very
on
much,
learning.
Debbie.
Okay, everyone. See you tomorrow.
Okay,
take your
bye.
Organon off the shelf and read it. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon? With homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.